Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/lawless. Just go to Indeed.com/lawless right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/lawless. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The CONCACAF Champions League remains a race to the moon and an opportunity to plant a flag of credibility for your club, league, and country. There was a time when American teams supported and cheered each other on in a rising tide lifts all boats type of approach. But now, I think it's everyone for themselves. And there's an individual desire to want to be the first to plant that CCL flag. Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lawless, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue-colored glasses. As you heard, we'll be talking the CONCACAF Champions League. We'll have our Mossy Makes the Case segment. He'll be talking about the UEFA Champions League results and how they change perception and narratives. We'll be answering your questions in our hashtag Ask Alexi segment with some college soccer talk and some more MLS and so much more. But first, as always, joining me, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox Soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. How are you this week, Mossy?
I am good. I am still here. I know you tried to replace me with a different co-host, but I waved off the substitution, so I'm still sitting in this chair.
you're all good. You know what I did this weekend, Mossy?
What's that?
I went back to my my high school. They invited me back. I went to a high school right outside of Detroit, a prep school called Cranbrook. You can make your appropriate 9 or 8 mile joke and all that kind of stuff right now. I was incredibly fortunate and privileged to go to this wonderful school, and they brought me back to speak in a lecture series, distinguished alumni. Obviously, none of them could come back, and so they got me. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful to be back and to see all these teachers and this incredible school and environment. It warmed the cockles of my redheaded heart, made me feel wonderful to be a proud alumni from that school, and also to get back to Detroit. I went to a Red Wing game. So I got to meet Dylan Larkin, who you might not know of, but he is one of the up-and-coming rising stars in the NHL and certainly the star for the Red Wings. I got to go down into the locker room and see this the new Little Caesars Arena. That's just incredible. So it was a fun time. I haven't been back in a real long time for any length of time, and it was fun to get back to a place and to see people that have meant so much to me over the years. Where did you go to high school, Mossy?
Scarsdale High School.
Scarsdale. Now, have you been back?
No, I've actually been invited to several reunions and have not attended any of them.
Because it was a scarring and a difficult experience for you? Or?
We're moving forward. Now, you mentioned that you were back in the state of Michigan. There was a very disappointing basketball game played in the state of Michigan yesterday.
This was the Michigan State-Michigan basketball. Correct. You are a Wolverine, as you love to tell us. Yeah. We have no actual verification of that, but we're going to take your word for it. Who won this game between the Wolverines and the Spartans in the battle for the court in Michigan? Was this at the
Ann
Spartans?
Arbor.
It was Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Wolverines, I take it from your tone, did not fare well.
Did not fare
They let
well.
The Spartans come into their home This is a running theme, isn't it,
yes.
with you guys? You let people come into your own territory and, well, not actually pee on it, but for all intents and purposes, just come in and desecrate it like that, and you did it again.
Yeah, yeah. Credit to them. Michigan State missing two of its best players due to injury went in there and were the better team and won by 7 deservedly. So hats off to them. Very good win for them. It made for a disappointing Sunday all the way around for me because I was also very underwhelmed by the True Detective finale. And I assumed everybody else was as well. But I come in today to find that our producer, Alex Dowd, loved it, thought it was one of the great hours in the history of television. So
it was a big day. We had incredible Bundesliga action, obviously EPL action Sunday, the Academy Awards. Did you watch the Oscars?
Some of it, yeah.
Yeah, it was okay even without a host. I thought the Queen and the music aspect of it was actually, for me, the most interesting part. It actually kind of made it better than the Grammys at times. But you know those things. They run long. They didn't run long this time, which was nice. But nothing really jumped out. There wasn't an incredible moment. I know the Lady Gaga duet with who's the dude from A Star Is Born? What's his name?
Bradley Cooper. Boy, Luis Aguilar, Johnny on the spot.
He knows his stuff.
He's a big Bradley Cooper
fan. He
knows
his actors turn singers. That was, I guess, the moment from a musical perspective a lot of people will point to, but it was kind of boring.
Do you know that show Inside the Actor's Studio?
Yes, of course I do, with Mr. Lipton. Right?
Yes, Bradley Cooper was famously a student, and there's footage of him like asking questions to establish that, and then he goes on to become what he became. But I did enjoy the movie Green Book, so I was fine with that.
You were happy with that win.
Yeah, Roma, Green Book, and A Star Is Born, to me, all would have been worthy winners. I enjoyed all three of those movies in different ways, so I was okay with that.
Every time this happens in the Oscars, you watch it, and because some of them are so obscure or don't have the distribution and the breadth that others do, and they're not big blockbusters, there's movies that you don't see. I just felt there's a lot of movies that I didn't see this year, which shouldn't be the case because movies should be are so much easier to see now. But you know, there was a lot of them. I said I've never even heard of that movie, and the fact that it's nominated for an Oscar obviously means people respect it, but it didn't even come across my landscape.
If the Oscars are looking for a host moving forward, you can now throw your hat in that ring.
Being that I've hosted Bundesliga on Fox, I mean that's a prerequisite for anything, right?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. All right, let's stop talking about the Oscars and my trips here and there and the failures of your alma mater. Okay, onward and upward. Are you ready to light this candle?
Yep.
All right, let's do it. As you know, each and every week, we kick off the pod with
Alexi Lawless's State of the Union.
Oh, yes, it's time for my State of the Union, where I look at a part of the game from an American perspective. And this week, it goes a little something like this. The CONCACAF Champions League kicked off this past week. Now, CCL is certainly the redheaded stepchild in the world of Champions Leagues, but it's ours. And each year, we watch as the tournament crowns the best club team in our region. When it comes to U.S. teams winning CCL in the modern form, it's a long and ugly history of futility. No American team has won it in the current form. The last time an American team was even in the final was Real Salt Lake in 2010. And the last time an American team won the competition in any form was 19 years ago in 2000 when the LA Galaxy won. It remains a race to the moon and an opportunity to plant a flag of credibility for your club, league, and country. Over the years, American clubs have approached the tournament with attitudes ranging from ambivalence and seeing it as a nuisance and an unnecessary diversion to reverence and seeing it as a priority that could help enhance a brand internationally. There was a time when American teams supported and cheered each other on in a rising tide lifts all boats type of approach. But now, I think it's everyone for themselves. And there's an individual desire to want to be the first to plant that CCL flag. Yes, it's bragging rights, and winning it won't solve all the problems and change the landscape overnight, but it checks a box that has been empty for far too long and has unfortunately come to be a reminder of how far American teams and leagues have to go, or another convenient reason for soccer fans both abroad and at home to simply dismiss American teams. Because how are you going to conquer the world if you can't even conquer your own region? All right, Mossy, CONCACAF Champions League. First off, does it even come on your radar? Does it even register?
Yes, it does. And I do find this storyline of MLS teams trying to finally make that breakthrough and win it quite fascinating. Now, I will say the warning signs were there for Toronto because they lost a preseason game 5-1 to the Las Vegas Lights. You might not have been aware of it because the Las Vegas Lights manager didn't make too big a deal of it, but nevertheless,
our good friend Eric Winalda was very excited about that result.
Yes.
As he should be.
Yeah. Now, Grant Wall, his opinion might have changed on this, but a couple years ago, he was bullish that people make too much of MLS's struggles in the CCL. Mm. He pointed to the fact that Premier League clubs haven't won the UEFA Champions League since 2012, and that's done nothing to undermine the popularity of the Premier League or hurt its brand. And so the degree to which like the perception of MLS is affected by their clubs winning or not winning the CCL is overrated. It's not that big a deal. What's your take on that?
Okay, so for us, first off, let's take a step back, and we try to bring everybody into the tent here. And there might be people out there who don't even know what the CONCACAF Champions League is. It's basically the championship for club teams of our region. We know CONCACAF with all of its members, which includes Canada and Mexico and all the Caribbean and Central American teams out there. This is something, as I mentioned in my State of the Union, that has provided a history of futility here. Just so everybody knows, it started up last week. The American representation that is in this tournament includes Atlanta United, the defending MLS Cup champs, who went down to Costa Rica and beat Herediano.
They lost to Herediano
3-1. Yeah. So it's not the worst result. They can come back and win 2-0 and then go through with, you know, with the away goes and the home and away type of thing. Sporting Kansas City won at home against Toluca. Toluca from Liga MX. I think they got it really within their opportunity to go through. Houston Dynamo went down and got a 1-0 win down in Guatemala. The ageless DeMarcus Beasley scoring a right-footed shot at the end of the game. I think they have it well within hand to go through. I think the New York Red Bulls, who also won their game down in the Dominican Republic, 2-0. They should go through. So some good results for the U.S. teams that are in it. Now the big result that from an MLS perspective people are looking at is Toronto FC going down to Independiente in their first go, the Panamanian club's first go, and getting absolutely crushed for nothing. So I think for the U.S. teams right now, the most work is probably from an Atlanta United standpoint, but they can certainly go home, even though they're not playing in Mercedes-Benz, and they're playing in a 10,000-seat stadium in Atlanta. They can still beat Herediano 2-0 and go through. So I think the U.S. teams are still sitting pretty. I don't think Toronto goes through coming back to Toronto losing 4-0.
I've noticed you made that distinction, you know.
When they win, they're Canadian. And Toronto, to be fair, is representing Canada because they are the champions of Canada when they do their Open Cup.
The big joke in England is that when Andy Murray wins, he's British. When he loses, he's Scottish. So there's sort of a similar dynamic with Toronto. I will say, though, sometimes you get caught out there having a team representing you that's no longer one of your best teams. It happens in Europe too. I mean, Monaco are one of the worst teams in France this season. They're battling relegation, and yet there they were representing Ligue 1 in the group stage of the UEFA Champions League by virtue of having finished second last season. So that sort of happened here. So MLS is going to get slagged for Toronto losing 4-0, but nobody thinks Toronto right now are one of the best teams in the league.
No, but and it's not a problem. It's just the reality of the modern day game. All teams, but especially in Major League Soccer, change so quickly and so dramatically that the team that was the team that was successful and is why you're even playing in these tournaments may look completely different. Obviously, Miguel Almirón is not going to be part of Atlanta. Neither is Tata Martino, the coach that got them there. So, and especially when it comes to MLS teams, because of the unique structure and the salary cap, and even the way that the season plays out, they are put at a disadvantage. Now, that's been a case that's not an excuse. It's just the reality of the situation. Every MLS team knows it. I mentioned in my State of the Union that different teams look at it differently. I do think that there's a recognition that this is something that, while it's not going to change everything, it's something that the bragging rights every team in MLS would like to have, especially in this day and age where teams, including MLS teams, while they want to be relevant domestically and certainly within their market, there's an effort and an emphasis on being global brands. Every team in the world wants to be a global brand. And when you are the champion of your region, and by the way, the champion of the region gets to participate in the FIFA Club World Cup, that's an honor, and that's a moment, and that's something that you can point to. And as I said before, it's one less complaint and argument and one less thing that people can point to as to why they don't like MLS or why they won't watch MLS or why MLS isn't credible or relevant or of quality.
Yeah, the Club World Cup thing is what I was going to bring up to kind of rebut the Grant Wall argument that I think it would be significant if we got to see like Atlanta United playing a competitive match against a Real Madrid or that sure. Would be sort of very neat. So to me, that's the reason why you want to see MLS clubs win this beyond just the bragging rights of you know, succeeding in it against other clubs from different countries in the region.
There was this other phenomenon that I talked about in the State of the Union where the league as a whole, and I'm talking about MLS, for example, and by the way, this is open to any professional team ultimately winning a U.S. Open Cup, but in this instance, we're talking about Major League Soccer and Major League Soccer teams where the league as a whole, even hashtag MLS for insert, you know, RSL, whoever it ended up being. I don't get that there's the same kumbaya type of feeling anymore. I think that there's a real desire for these teams to be that first one. And as I said before, we have had U.S. teams that have been the champions of CONCACAF. It's just come in a very different. So, for example, when I played in it many, many years ago for the Los Angeles Galaxy, it was a two-week tournament that happened in a much more tournament type of style, in a World Cup type of style, where you had your groups, you came out, and then you had a champion, and it was played in one region. Now, obviously, it's completely changed. So, in this form, in the way that they play it right now, there's a recognition that for MLS to progress, they just need to check that box. And I think that there will be a sense of accomplishment, but also a sense of relief from the league office. And that accomplishment and something to build upon and something to champion and beat your chest about will come to whatever MLS team ultimately finds a way to do it.
What do you make of the current format? It's the second year that they've had it. I have mixed feelings about it. They scrapped the group stage. Now we go straight into knockout ties, 16 right. teams. And it makes it more exciting in a way, but I don't know. It also makes what's ostensibly like the showpiece competition in your region awkwardly brief. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're sort of used to like these continental competitions having different stages and group stage and knockout and spanning like a bigger part of the year. Are you happy with the way it is right now? How do you feel about it?
Well, first off, it's difficult because the disparity of quality from top to bottom in CONCACAF is very different than the disparity of quality from Europe. And we know that UEFA Champions League is the gold standard. And so when you're trying to do a Champions League in CONCACAF where you have such a disparity of talent, you don't want to have these teams not only playing games but having to travel and do all this stuff and play against. And yet, I have to remind people sometimes that CONCACAF's job is not to prop up Major League Soccer. CONCACAF's job is not to prop up American teams or North American soccer or Liga MX or any. CONCACAF's job is to represent their membership. And so whether it's the amount of spaces that they are championing to have for a full men's World Cup or a full women's World Cup, or giving opportunities to teams that haven't had them in the past to prop them up, to give them opportunities so that they can grow, so they can be more competitive, and we're not going to ever get rid of it completely, but we can lessen that space and that disparity between the haves and the have-nots and the good teams and the bad teams in CONCACAF. And by doing what you said, to a certain extent, they're being much more exclusive and elitist in the way that they are going about. And some of these teams that want to have the opportunity, until they're actually given the opportunity, but in order to get that opportunity, you have to have teams traveling, you have to have teams playing against teams that aren't very good.
And for the MLS teams that perform poorly, do you think it's a valid excuse that they're in preseason mode, that this is now sort of an awkward time in the calendar to be playing important matches?
It's valid in that it exists and everybody recognizes it, but it's not valid in that it's just a crutch that we use. Look, MLS does things differently, and they believe in the way that they run their business and the way that they run their teams, and that's all fine and well. Does it put them at a disadvantage when they are playing against teams? And not all teams, not the majority of teams that they're playing on. A lot of this is focused in on Liga MX and the disparity and the one hand behind their back aspect that MLS teams face, either from a salary cap perspective and therefore a talent perspective, or a seasonal perspective. And you know, MLS teams are just starting to get into their the MLS kicks off this weekend, so they're just starting to get in. But I don't think that MLS teams use it as an excuse. It's always there. But there's not a legitimate alternative that I've seen unless you completely blow it up. What, do you have one? Do you have an alternative?
No, it's interesting. A couple of years ago when they were discussing reformatting this competition, evidently there was a proposal on the table to structure it in such a way where the climactic matches would take place in November. And Don Garber didn't want that because he didn't want that competing with the climax of the MLS season. So that's kind of an interesting aspect of this discussion.
You don't want that. And MLS and teams, American teams, this is focused on MLS because those are the teams that are in it. But this could just as easily be Eric Winalda's Las Vegas Lights, right? Playing in this tournament. while they recognize there are disadvantages, they don't use those. At times they have in the past. I don't think anybody uses it anymore. I do think, you know, someone like Peter Vermes, I know for a fact that while it poses challenges to him and what he wants to do, it would be an incredible feather in his cap to be able to say that they want it, to be able to say that they were the first in the modern era to do it, especially with what they've created there. They're off to a good start, but everybody wants that moment because there will be only one first in the modern form of this tournament. So we'll see how this goes on from an MLS perspective, from a U.S. team perspective. We'll see if, from an MLS perspective, if Toronto FC can overcome a 4-0 deficit when they go back home. But I think from a U.S. team perspective, a lot of these teams are sitting pretty right now, although Atlanta, they got to do some work when they get home. All right, moving on. Hello, people. Alexi Lawless here. More of the State of the Union podcast is on the way, but first, I wanted to tell you about a service every soccer fan needs to check out. Fox Soccer Match Pass. With Fox Soccer Match Pass, you can stream live and on-demand matches from the Bundesliga, international friendlies, and more, all on your favorite devices. And the best part? It's all ad-free, and you can cancel at any time. So, check out foxsoccermatchpass.com and get started with a free 7-day trial today. Now, back to the show.
Mossy makes the case.
All right, time for Mossy Makes the Case. What are you casing for this week, Mossy?
My case is that there's no more unforgiving competition than the UEFA Champions League. It has the ability to change narratives on a dime. Last week, Juventus traveled to Madrid to take on Atletico in the first leg of the Champions League round of 16, which for Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, meant returning to the city that he called home for the previous 9 years. Yeah. Ronaldo, of course, led Real Madrid to the Champions League title in the last 3 of those seasons and in 4 of the last 5, and it was largely his success in this competition that cemented his legacy. On the occasion of his returning to Spain, there were lots of articles written about his move to Juventus, including one I read in a Spanish newspaper called El País, which talked about what a home run signing this has been, how Ronaldo has not only elevated the stature of Serie A, but he's revitalized the city of Turin to the point that even Torino fans are glad he's there. And as far as the Champions League, it talked about how by having Ronaldo, Juventus now have this newfound confidence in their ability to lift the trophy. Well, that was Monday's story. On Wednesday, they lost 2-0 to Atletico Madrid. They're now on the precipice of being eliminated. And after that match, I read a slew of stories about how if they do go out in this round, Ronaldo's signing will have been a flop because they brought him there to win this competition, not to win Serie A, which they've already won for 7 straight seasons without him. Now, we can debate whether that's fair or not, but I think it highlights once again what a combustible mix we have here. The Champions League has grown in stature and prestige to the point that this is now the competition that super clubs measure themselves by. You have several teams that are obsessed with winning it, from Juventus to Bayern Munich to Barcelona to PSG, and yet the nature of the competition is such that when you get to these later rounds, you face other great clubs, and one bad night or sometimes one bad bounce or one bad refereeing decision can sink you. And then, of course, coaches get fired, and this player is a fraud, and that signing is a flop. Listen, it's great drama for us as viewers, but it can be incredibly harsh for those participating.
So for me, this points out the challenge and certainly the problem that not all leagues, but certain leagues have. Because you're absolutely right in that you're finishing in terms of the league perspective, and this applies to Italy, this applies to France, and specifically to Juventus in Italy, and specifically to PSG in France. For the most part, it has usually has applied to Germany with the Bundesliga and with Bayern Munich, although they at least have a competition. The parity, or excuse me, the lack of parity that exists in some of these leagues makes it so it is just your league is a formality and a training session, if you will, for what ultimately you are going to be judged. And there's no surprise that that's what coaches are judged on. That's what success is judged on. And that's what the public, both domestically and internationally, judges you on when you don't have. For example, Liverpool right now. I've talked to our Liverpool friends who say, if we had choose between Champions League and winning the title, and it's a little bit different because they haven't done it in so long, they're going to take winning the EPL. But it means so much more when you actually have people that are challenging for the title in your league, which we do have now in England. Spain is a little interesting and different, and they've gone back and forth where Barcelona's won the league and Real Madrid's won Champions League, and which one is more important, and they'll get on their pedestal and say, well, this one's important, this one's more important, but it's still basically those two just going at it. But this Super League in the future, quote-unquote Super League or anything like that, they're almost living and playing within that Super League. And the Champions League games are simply the actual real games, and the games that they play during the week domestically are simply training games.
It's amazing on the topic of changing narratives. Now, Manchester United have since ripped off some impressive results, so people are back on the social bandwagon, but it was hilarious to me. They had won all those games, and he was getting all sorts of praise, and then they lose that first leg against PSG at home, and there was actually talk afterwards, like, yeah, maybe he's not the guy. I guess they are going to have to find a new manager after he lost one game. It was incredible.
So, because people's perception and the way that they value you versus those other super, because we have a super class of teams right now, that's ultimately how they're judged. And there is an insecurity, if you are a supporter of one of these super clubs around the world, there's an insecurity when ultimately you lose to another super club out there, because that's the bar by which you are judged. Now, when it comes to the change of narrative, we know it's changed, but we know it can very easily change back. Do you think that Cristiano Ronaldo, in what he does because he's Cristiano, has the capacity to change it back?
Yeah, I mean, this was always a very scary tie for Juventus. This is, in my opinion, the best team Simeone's ever had there, and they're very motivated because the final is at their home stadium. Mm-hmm. And also, they received a boost recently. Simeone signed a contract extension until 2022, which is amazing. For a long time there, we thought there was this inevitability that he was going to want to parlay his success at Atletico to a different job, but he seems very happy staying there. So, for the foreseeable future. So Atletico are a very tough opponent, not a team that you want to be down 2-0 against. But I will say the silver lining of it being Atletico is that I think there's less of a fear of them getting an away goal. If you're facing somebody like Barcelona or Manchester City with a high-powered attack and you're down 2-0, in the back of your mind, you know, if they score a goal, then we need four. But I think Atletico aren't going to take too many chances in that return leg. They're going to park the bus. Simeone is going to really look to protect that 2-0 advantage. So it's totally plausible to me that Juventus are going to shut them out at home, and it's only going to be really two goals they need to force extra time. And when you have Cristiano Ronaldo on the field for 90 minutes at home, it's not that implausible that you can get two goals.
All right, well, let's finish it off here with just flying through here for your predictions then. So Schalke at Manchester City. Man City went and won away 3-2.
Yeah, it was crazy the way it happened, but in the end, they ended up, look, we thought, a scoreline that basically kills the tie, and they'll take care of business at home.
But it's not a surprise. Man City's going to go through. Okay, because now they get to play at home against Schalke. Okay, you said that you think that Juventus can come back from this 2-0 deficit at home?
It's possible, yes.
Okay, would you put all of the Mossy fortune?
No, if I had to bet, I would bet on Atletico.
You would? Okay, all right. So PSG, we were just talking about.
Oh, we're going all the way to.
We're just going through. We're going. PSG won 2-0 away at Manchester United, and you were just mentioning the narrative for what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is, isn't it? So what do you think? They go back?
Yeah, PSG finish him off. No Pogba in the return leg, which is big. He got a red card late in that first.
Okay, we had talked last week about the 3-0 demolition of Borussia Dortmund. Well, not demolition, but certainly from a scoreline, Tottenham.
I'll say this. If anybody can screw that up, it is Tottenham. If Royce is back, you never know.
Are you smelling a Spurs type of performance? Is that what's happening here? Oh, wow.
Obviously,
Spurs fans are pulling over to the side of the road. Stop their run right now. Okay, so you think that there's they cannot possibly be as Spursy as to lose a 3-0 advantage going back to Borussia Dortmund. Okay, quick. Lyon Barcelona 0-0. Barcelona 0-0,
which I know a lot's been made about what a scary scoreline that is for Barcelona, because a scoring draw at second leg they lose, but they're so much better than Lyon. They outshot them 25-5. The ball just didn't want to go in that first leg. Barcelona should
Roma Porto. Roma won at home 2-1.
That was a toss up going in, and it's still a toss up. I have no feel on that.
Ajax lost at home to Real Madrid, although Ajax looked wonderful. Everybody loves to talk about how great Ajax is and the talent. And isn't this great? And they're just playing without fear, and all these young bucks running around, and then they lose.
Obviously, Real Madrid should go through.
Okay, and then the big one,
which I do want to talk about.
All right,
for a second.
So let's finish it off here. Liverpool, Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich went to Anfield, got a 0-0 tie, didn't score an away goal, obviously. So from a Liverpool perspective, that's a good thing. But do you think that they have enough going back to Munich?
I'll say this. I thought going in, Liverpool were the better team. I still think they're the better team. If I had to pick, I would pick Liverpool to go through. But it's moved closer to a 50-50 because we were reminded in that first leg that pedigree does matter. Mm-hmm. You know, we watched Bayern Munich play in the Bundesliga. A few days earlier, they had given up two goals to Augsburg. And you think, oh, my God, against Liverpool at Anfield, they're going to get their doors blown. blown off. And 10 minutes into that first leg, I was sort of reminded, wait a minute, it's still Bayern Munich. It's a big game. That DNA kicks in, and you know they're going to put in a performance here, which they did, and they got a decent result. Now, I do think the way they approached that match was sort of a concession that they're not the Bayern Munich of old, because they used to be a team that can go anywhere and play their game and look to dominate. And the way they approached that first leg against Liverpool was clearly, let's try to get out of here 0-0 and be very conservative. So, but they executed the game plan well, and it's a decent result for them. Although, like I say, 0-0 to me is a bit of an overrated result for the away team in a first leg of a two-legged tie, and it's an underrated result for the home team, because you go back knowing that a scoring draw, you know, Liverpool goes through. So it's not that great a result for Bayern, but we'll see. I mean, I think it's like I said, it's pretty close to a toss-up. It's very intriguing to see how the second leg plays out, but I would still pick Liverpool to go through.
Bayern's going through. All right, moving on.
Ask Alexi.
Okay, it's time for our Ask Alexi segment, that hashtag Ask Alexi you've used on all those social media platforms out there to ask us some questions. Mossy, what do the people want to know this week?
All right, first up, at WV Revy, Pulisic, Way, Adam, Sargent, McKinney, Stefan, Horvath, Carter Vickers, and he goes on to list.
There's a list of people there, I see. Yeah.
Are we on the verge of a quote-unquote golden generation for U.S. soccer? Has there ever been this much young potential in the pool?
Yes, there has been this much young potential in multiple pools in their past. I think we are living in an age where the awareness fueled by technology makes it so that we see each and every potential player. As soon as a young American talented player kicks the ball in the right direction, it's on YouTube. There's a tweet about it, and we have found the savior. So it's not to say that this generation isn't good. It's not to say that you shouldn't be bullish and excited about this generation, the players that you mentioned, and a whole bunch of other ones. But I also think that it's reflective of the fact that there's a more traditional type of pathway for a lot of these players that are coming out of development systems. Whether that means that they're better or not, though, that I think is a big question. I think there's a recognition and a perception that they are better oftentimes. But ultimately, we know that talent, realizing that talent and that potential has so much. There are so many different factors: timing, coaches, injuries, a million different things off the field that may or may not happen to a player. And so we love to extrapolate it out that, well, this player is doing this right now, and so therefore 5 years he is going to be there. And that's what we do. It's great. I love that we do that. But all of that is to say, WV Revy, is that while I remain cautiously optimistic that this is a talented group, it's not the most talented group that it's no more or less talented than groups that we have had in the past. Some of those groups have gone on to produce multiple players, and really all you're asking for in a golden generation is 2, 3, 4.5 type of players, right? Which is great, and you want to have that happen. I think this has potential to do that, and I know I'm going back and forth here, but ultimately I disagree with you that this is the golden generation or the pool of talent with the most potential right now.
I do think there's a lot of talent there, and this is what the sky is falling crowd in the wake of the U.S.'s qualification failure has always struggled to reconcile. For a country that's supposedly doing everything wrong, the U.S. is producing some very good young players here. Some of these youth national teams, under 17, under 20 teams, have actually looked very good the last couple of years. And by the way, the U.S. this weekend found out their group opponents for the upcoming under 20 World Cup.
Tab Ramos coaching.
Yep, Ukraine, Nigeria, and Qatar. That under 20 World Cup begins in late May in Poland. So keep an eye on that. So, yeah, I mean, I actually, looking at this list and even left off a couple of guys, I actually do think it's fairly impressive.
But ultimately, when you say this, it has to come to fruition. And what do we equate with fruition or coming to fruition? It's being good in the World Cup. So all of these players 4 years from now have to feature in the, well, not all of them, but this group of players has to be that pool that created the core of the team in 4 years or 8 years from now. So we'll see it at that time. But we've done this before. We have seen groups of talented young American players who have, and this is back once again before you could see every single player. So I remain, as I said, cautiously optimistic. All right, next.
Next up, at Jose G. Lopez 00, help settle an argument. Would you rather, as a player, lose a World Cup final a la any Croatian, or to be left off the 23 for the winning team a la Lacazette, Benzema, Martial, etc.?
Well, I know that some of you out there have listened to the Roger Bennett podcast, American Fiasco, including Mossy. You've listened to that at times. And there was a point there where Roger asked, I think, if, you know, if we were talking about, would you have rather not been a part of that? No. You all, even a bad team, even an implosion, the likes of which we saw in 1998, there's no part of me that would ever not have want to be there, despite how horrible it was. So, would you rather, as a player, lose a World Cup final like a Croatian? All right, to lose a World Cup final, you have to play in a World Cup final, which means you got to the World Cup final. And in particular, in this instance, it's Croatia. It's not Brazil losing a World Cup final, okay? This is Croatia. Or to be left off the 23 for the winning team. So, Benzema, look, those... So if France had lost, right? Is that what he's saying? If France had lost the World Cup and Lacazette, Benzema, Martial had the option of being on that team and losing, is that what he's asking?
It's basically a question regarding patriotism, like... you can personally be involved and not win, or not be involved but have your country win, and which scenario are you going to come out of feeling better about?
No, you want to be there. You want to be there and lose than not be involved. No, you, as a player, that ego and that beautiful ego at times, that's what fuels you. That's what makes you – look, that's like when you clap for somebody who has won and you haven't won. When, you know, we see, like, last night at the Oscars, when everyone's clapping, oh, so happy for you, officer and gentleman type of thing. Yeah, I'm really happy for you. We're human beings. No, you want to be there. You want to be in that moment and experience both the good and the bad.
Frankly, reading this question reminded me again how loaded France are that they could afford to leave players like that.
That's true, right? That's pretty nice.
And still have an amazing attack with Griezmann and Mbappe and Dembele and others. Okay, next question. At Brent Keller 5150, isn't that the title of a Van Halen album?
It is. It is. It's Eddie Van Halen's recording studio. It is the, what is it, on the police scanner. It's what they use for a criminally insane escapee, right, or something like that. And in the name of both a song and an album. Very good, Mossy.
And one note before I read this. There was another gentleman who had asked the exact same question, and we were going to use that, but this guy hashtagged it properly.
Yes. Yes.
So, folks, you have to be aware of that if you want to get on this pod. So,
just please follow directions, okay?
At Brent Keller 5150, is college soccer still a viable option for top-tier talent?
Is it still a viable option for top-tier talent? When it comes to the men's game, because there has to be kind of a separation, because I think that's much more of a viable option going forward for the women's game than it has become for the men's game. I still think that it's a viable option. I still think that there will be players that take the college route, either by choice or just by necessity, and are good players, some even possibly great. I think it's a shame that we have marginalized the unique experience of high school soccer in the name of development, but I also think it's a shame that we have, to a certain extent, marginalized and destroyed the unique experience of college soccer. And, you know, I get asked this all the time. I get it. We are in an effort and in a time where we want to create better soccer players. And in the whole Gladwell 10,000 hours specialization type of world that we live in, the more soccer you play with, the better competition that you have, the theory goes, the better you will possibly be. And college soccer... some programs are good, some programs aren't. In general, college soccer, we all know, is too short of a period of time. And when college soccer players are only playing a certain amount of months, as opposed to other players who are in developmental programs, second teams for MLS teams, all of that kind of stuff, where they are playing on a consistent basis, but they are bypassing the experience. And in our effort, and I've said this before, in our effort to create better soccer players, we just need to make sure that we don't forget that, number one, the 22 and a half hours off the field is as important as the 90 minutes on the field. And giving these players the tools and the skills to deal with that 22 and a half hours, I do think, is our responsibility. Number two, in our effort to create better soccer players, we are efforting to create better elite soccer players. But know that only a very small percentage are going to live up to that. And we are going to cast aside hundreds, if not thousands of players who have bypassed and therefore given up the opportunity, in many cases from an economic perspective, given up incredible opportunities to get the education, to have that education paid for. And while we might hear about the success stories or the players that made a lot of money, they are in the incredible minority. And we have a responsibility to make sure that we are giving them both the opportunity to be a better soccer player, but also the opportunity to be a better person. Because win or lose, incredible player, elite player or not, successful or not, these are men and in many cases women, young men and women that we are, if they don't make it, dumping them back out on our society, and they're going to lead our country going forward, and they are going to have the skills. And oftentimes you're not getting those skills. You're not getting the experience, that the responsibility, the social interaction, the success and failure that comes from going through a college program that has nothing necessarily to do always with kicking the ball. But I get it. I understand why it is so enticing. And just from a practical standpoint, you can say, well, it's just better and it's going to make you a better soccer player. And that's, if that's all that you're concentrating on, you can probably do that. But I'm just telling you, the greatest soccer players that I have met have been the ones that have the capacity to deal with that 22 and a half hours that they are not playing the game of soccer. And that's oftentimes what gives them the ability to succeed and to be great in that 90 minutes on the field. So, I mean, is it a viable option for top-tier talent? I don't think it's a viable option right now for top-tier talent. Both, and much more so in the perception. People are going to say, well, he went to college and therefore he's really not serious about soccer. And that's a pity. It's a shame. And college soccer has brought a lot of this upon themselves. And it needs to change dramatically in order to compete, or if they even want to compete, because a lot of players are going to go the opposite way. And my greatest fear is that we're only going to hear about the ones that are successful, and all the hundreds and possibly thousands of players that aren't successful, we're going to dump them back out, and they're going to be lacking in the skills to deal with a life that doesn't have soccer, or a life that has soccer but hasn't made them enough money, and they don't have the skill to continue on when the soccer is taken away, because inevitably it will be taken away. All right, Brent, that's my answer for that. 5150, I love it. All right, thanks for the questions. Remember, use that Ask Alexi hashtag, and we will make sure to collect the best ones and use them each and every week. And Mossy might read your question on future episodes of the State of the Union podcast. All right, moving on.
The Back Three.
All right, we come to our Back Three, some big stories and games or moments out there in the world of soccer. What do we have this week, Mossy?
All right, let's start in England and all the craziness with Chelsea. Thank God for Kepa, because Sunday was actually a very disappointing day in England. There were two matches that everyone was excited about, Manchester United against Liverpool in the Premier League and Chelsea-Manchester City in the League Cup final. Both failed to deliver. Both ended 0-0. City won the League Cup final on penalties. And had the Kepa incident not happened, we wouldn't have had a whole lot to talk about, but the incident did happen. The Chelsea goalkeeper refused to be subbed out. What did you make of the whole situation?
Allegedly refused to be subbed out when Chelsea manager Sadi wanted to substitute the goalkeeper. What did I make of it? I thought it was brilliant theater. I thought it was wonderful. I knew immediately that regardless of who won the game, and certainly if Man City won the game, which they ultimately did, that would be a byline way down in the bottom of the story. That was not that Man City won a trophy is not the story. This is going to be the story, as it should, because it was just mind-boggling. For a lot of people that have watched the game for a long time, they had never seen it. Now, the damage control immediately started to happen from a Chelsea perspective and from those involved. And for those that didn't see it, they wanted to make a substitution for the goalkeeper, a young player that they had brought this year, young goalkeeper, obviously talented. For how much money, Mossy? Ridiculous.
$80 million
or something like that. Certainly the future of goalkeeping for Chelsea. And he... at least the way it looked for everybody that was watching, he waved him off. Now, they have since come out and said that there was a miscommunication between the physios, whatever they call them over there, and the electronic communication back and forth, and that Sarri thought that he actually had a cramp and there was a problem, and so he was angry that he would continue on like that, and Kepa didn't have a cramp and he was okay. Doesn't matter. It was a bad look for everybody involved. Now, a couple of things. One, the problem for Sarri isn't that a player rebuffed him, because that can certainly happen. You know, players you want players to be on the field. You want players to be angry and pissed off when they are getting taken off the field. If I was a coach, if I was a teammate, that's what I want. The problem for Sarri, like I said, so that's not the problem that a player did this. It's that all the other players watched it and they allowed it, and therefore they didn't seem bothered by it, and therefore they condoned it. There was nobody running up and saying, no, you're leaving the field right now. Because I guarantee if players from Chelsea had gone to him and said, get off the field right now, he would have done it in mass if that had happened. That did not happen. The other part that was interesting for me was, and this comes back to wanting players that want to be on the field, there was, for me, almost a sense of appreciation. And I'm going to use the word respect, and maybe that's not it, but you know, I mentioned this on Twitter. What if Marcus Rashford had done the same thing to Mourinho in the dark days when they were having just all the problems? And this is all in the context of where they are right now under Ole Gunnar. What if they had done it to Mourinho? People would be applauding him. Finally, somebody standing up and taking our team back, and it's coming from a young player, and we love him. So there is an element of leadership and ownership and accountability to Kepa's what was very public defiant act that, like I said, I can almost respect.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Let me play devil's advocate for a second here, because although we've seen instances in which a team has brought on a goalkeeper late in extra time, specifically because they want him for the shootout, the Netherlands famously did that in the 2014 World Cup with Tim Krul.
Yep.
That's not what was happening here. Asadi made it clear afterwards the only reason he was making that switch was because of Kepa's physical issues. So to me, there is some room for a player who knows he's only getting subbed out because the manager thinks he's injured and who feels like he's not injured and fit enough to continue to try to convey that to the bench and argue, no, I'm fine. Keep me in the game.
Right.
Like, we've seen that happen before. So that in and of itself wouldn't have been that big an issue, but just somebody needed to budge earlier. If as soon as Kepa popped up and said, I'm okay, Sadi had said, oh, okay, never mind, and told Caballero to sit down, we're not going to make the change, it wouldn't have been that big a deal. Or if Kepa had put up a little bit of a fight, but when Sadi insisted he wanted to take him out, then Kepa relented and said, okay, I guess I have to come. I'm not happy about it. We've seen that as well. It was just the fact that neither one budged. So it was like this awkward minute-long standoff between the two that did make it, frankly, kind of embarrassing. And so that was the issue for me, just how long the indecision lasted.
It was crazy. And then our good friend Keith Costigan, who makes this program seemingly every single week in some capacity or other, he had tweeted out, and I retweeted it. He said, I've got to admit, I felt a little sorry for Sarri in the whole type of situation. It's something he shouldn't have to deal with. And my point to him was, you're sorry for Sarri? Are you kidding me? His one and only job is to, quote, deal with it. All the cool kids, all the time, they tell me, what we call them managers. You know, you have all those Euro snobs that do all the kinds, or just soccer snobs in general. Oh, that's what we call them managers. All right, if you call them managers, then go manage. It's your job to deal with this right now. It's your job to deal in the moment and not have a complete fit. Or if you do have that fit, now you got to deal with it post game. So what are you going to do? Are you going to bench the player? Are you going to change the player? And by the way, this is happening, and this is why I brought up the Rashford type of thing. This is happening at a time where Chelsea is imploding, and Alex is over there just crying over there in the corner. But look, don't kill the messenger, man. I mean, and you don't need a messenger. Everybody can see it. There is a problem right now with this team. And the other thing was, somebody else had made a point to me about, this is endemic, this is systemic of a horrible, horrible culture that has existed for years and years. Let me tell you something about culture. Let me tell you something about a systemic and cancerous type of culture. So someone, he had asked me, let me see if I can find this. He asked me, look at the long line of managers at Chelsea that have come and gone. Yeah, they've changed managers. First off, they're not the only team in the world that has changed managers on a consistent basis. But he wanted to know what the common denominator is. And I told him this on Twitter. I said, the common denominator is always not winning enough. When you win enough, the mentality and the culture of the club is seen as positive, healthy, and good. And when you don't win enough, the mentality and the culture of the club is seen as negative, weak, and bad. And so that's what the situation was. This is not something that is festered and underneath and, you know, cancerous, living and breathing inside of Chelsea. They're just not winning enough.
Well, to that point, let's say a couple of those penalties go a different way. I mean, Kepa almost saved Aguero's penalty. It slipped under his hand.
He should say that one, yeah.
So let's say he saves that, and then Luis, who almost always makes his penalties, hit the post. If that goes in, Chelsea wins the shootout. What would we be talking about right now? Would the Kepa thing be kind of something we'd laugh about? But in the end, the story is that Sadi won a trophy, and his tactics were spot on in that game. He won a trophy at the expense of Manchester City, and that maybe this is the first step towards him sort of recovering, you know, there. I mean, how different would the storyline be?
Would have been completely different. That's, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about, these narratives that just shift on results. And ultimately, in this case, it's shifting on trophies, which we put so much stock in for coaches.
Now, I do want to get to the transfer ban. I'm telling you, Chelsea are like Donald Trump right now. I mean, the news comes fast and furious, and it changes. The transfer ban feels like three news cycles ago, but I do think...
they are the gift that keeps on giving, Chelsea.
Incredible. I do think it's a big story. So, for people to know, FIFA have very strict rules regarding signing players under the age of 18. The player has to be living within a certain amount of miles of your training ground, and you have to provide a certain education and living conditions. And some clubs have run afoul of those rules in recent years, and so they've all been handed the same punishment, which is the inability to register new players for two straight transfer windows. Now, the big clubs before Chelsea that were hit with this were three Spanish clubs, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Atletico Madrid. Now, none of them were that affected by it. I mean, to go through each situation quickly, Barcelona were able to delay the ban on appeal and then went out the transfer window before, signed a bunch of players, including Luis Suarez and Ivan Rakitic, built this juggernaut of a team, went out and won the treble that season. The ban ended up being for a winter window in which they wouldn't have done anything anyway, and then a summer window in which they still signed players, right, but just weren't able to register them. They signed them with the understanding that you're going to be ineligible for half a season here, and then you'll be able to play starting in January 2016. Real Madrid got their ban reduced to only one winter window, so who cares? Atletico, it was one winter window, which they wouldn't have done anything, and then one summer window, which again, they signed Diego Costa and Vitolo, and Diego Costa sat out a half a season. Vitolo, they loaned out. You can do that as well. And
it's like Pablo Escobar's jail.
Exactly. Exactly. So all these clubs were still very strong, still won trophies during those seasons. It didn't affect them that much. People do think, though, with Chelsea, it could be different because they're in a greater state of flux. There's bigger question marks, more potential comings and goings. They might have a new manager who presumably would want to bring in his own players. So we'll see if they can get it delayed or reduced or what happens. It's hard to talk about it without knowing exactly what the ban is going to end up being. But I'll ask it because a lot of people are curious in this country from the Pulisic perspective.
Right.
Just in general, all this stuff, the Kepa incident, this transfer ban, all the chaos at Chelsea. As an American, how does that make you feel about Pulisic going there? Do you look at it now and it's like that's a crazy decision for him to pick that club, or can you put a positive spin on it that he can be some sort of savior? What's your overall feeling on Pulisic to Chelsea?
I think this is even better. If I'm in Christian Pulisic's shoes, I'm saying I have an opportunity here. In the same way that players coming into the U.S. men's national team are coming in at a point where it can only get better and only go up, that to me, I smell opportunity. You can come in, and savior's a big word, but you can come in and number one, very, very quickly move forward and evolve and get better and be perceived as better because it has been so bad. And number two, with that comes opportunities on the field because you know that they are going to make the changes that are necessary to get this thing back on track. This is a big global brand and they will do the things necessary. I feel like it's coming to the end regardless right now with the Hazard situation. Who's in the back? Your Brazilian friend with the long hair.
David Luiz.
Yes, David Luiz. You know, these types of things where it's run its course now. So I think I think change was inevitable. And I think Christian Pulisic, at least the way I would look at it if I was in his shoes, is this is a great opportunity for to come in, to get playing time, and to bring this team back. And in that, be the star. Not the star, but one of these stars.
Yeah, if the transfer ban does apply for this summer, first of all, it doesn't affect him because
no,
he's already a Chelsea player that they loaned
and
to Dortmund.
And maybe they did that on purpose.
And by the way,
they knew this was coming.
Exactly.
Maybe.
And by the way, Chelsea have like 300 players on loan everywhere. Right. They might be able to find one or two good ones there and recall
you
them.
Think?
But it cuts both ways. If the ban applies for this summer, it means they can't bring in anybody else that could potentially compete with him for playing time. But it also means they presumably wouldn't sell the Hazards and Hudson-Odois because knowing they can't replace him, that would be tough to get rid of him. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, like I said, it cuts both ways with Pulisic, and we'll have to wait and see exactly what the ban ends up being if they get it pushed back at all. If they get it pushed back, then I expect them to be very busy this summer because they'll do what Barcelona did and realize we got to get a bunch of stuff done this summer in preparation for the fact that we're not going to be able to do anything for the next two windows. So,
all right, last question on this topic. Sorry, is he there next year or not?
No.
Okay, he's gone. Arrivederci. Okay, next.
Next up, we have two El Clasicos coming up. Barcelona and Real Madrid will play two straight matches at the Bernabeu. Wednesday, it is the second leg of the Copa del Rey semifinals. Remember, the first leg was 1-1 at Camp Nou. Mm-hmm. And then the following weekend, they will play in the league. A game that doesn't have a whole lot of juice to me because Real Madrid lost to Girona recently. The gap is now 9 in La Liga, so nobody thinks that they're going to make that up anymore. So it's really more about the Copa del Rey. But a couple notes here, Barcelona related. Real Madrid are facing Lionel Messi, who is coming off a virtuoso performance this past weekend. Barcelona won 4-2 away to Sevilla. Messi had a hat trick and an assist, and the first two goals were absolute works of art. And again, I came across all these tweets from people saying, what a privilege it is that we get to watch this guy week in and week out. And I always think when I read those, well, then why don't you watch him week in and week out? Because when I, based on my Twitter feed, it seems like a lot more people in this country are watching the Premier League than watching like random Barcelona La Liga games. And I was going to ask you, when you're flipping around on weekends and deciding which games to watch, obviously you're going to gravitate to the more compelling games. But every now and then, is there ever a sense of like, oh, I just feel like watching Messi today and I'm privileged to have this guy playing? And so even though Barcelona might be playing some riffraff in Spain, like every now and then I got to kind of check in on Messi and like enjoy his genius.
Well, it's not that I or people, well, first off, Mossy, Twitter is not real life. Okay. So don't base everything on Twitter. Number two, it's not like I or anybody check in with Messi. It's much more that Messi checks in with us. So when he provides a virtuoso performance like this in our day and age where instantaneously we get the highlights or we get comments and saying, hey, something special is happening. Either you'll go and you'll see it. I mean, for example, I was coming up the elevator today and our security guard here at the building, who I know doesn't watch a lot of soccer, but immediately he said, did you see what happened with Messi this weekend? So,
oh, interesting. Wow.
It transcended and that, and yes, maybe it's unfair that the thought was Messi's back. Because he hasn't really been gone anywhere. He reminded us with a virtuoso performance that obviously is that much better because it's goals. You know, Messi can do some stuff where he's not scoring goals that only the diehards will really appreciate and like. But when he scores goals and scores the type of goals that he scored, people are going to see it and it's going to be beamed all around. And so Messi reminds us with those performances as opposed to us going and actually seeking it out.
And I said the riffraff in Spain. Sevilla are hardly, you know, I mean, they're actually a very good team. So that's added another layer to it this weekend that he did it away from home against a very good team. But the other Barcelona story I thought was interesting. I mentioned that Atletico signed Simeone to an extension. Barcelona, that same day, announced that they had signed Ernesto Valverde to an extension, which I thought was very interesting because that's a very demanding club, and Valverde is hardly like beloved by all the fans there. He's done a pretty good job. I don't know that he's done anything incredible in terms of the quality of the football or the results. And even Valverde, a month or two ago in a press conference, was asked about his future, and he said, look, it's probably going to hinge on the results this season and how we finish in the Champions League and La Liga. And without even knowing that, they went ahead and gave him an extension, which I thought was interesting. Now, they're probably going to win the league, but if they get knocked out by Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey and then got knocked out by Lyon in the round the 16 of the Champions League, like, and
we're
he's
back,
already signed and sealed for next season.
They're probably going to win the league, but nobody really cares about that. So it really comes back to Champions League.
I was
what everything is judged
surprised.
Upon when you are a super club, and rightfully so. I don't know, but that's the reality, and everybody knows that. The players know that, the fans know that, and most importantly, the person that takes the job, the head coaching job, knows that going in.
Yeah, but I was frankly surprised because, you know, we sort of roll our eyes sometimes. You know, you talk about, I think for the most part, you're right, that it's about winning and all the stuff about quality of the football that you play is sort of, you know. But with Barcelona, that is important. That's baked into the analysis as well. And for the talent they've had the last couple of years, I don't think they've played like mind-blowing football by Barcelona standards. So there's that element of it too. A lot of the fan base isn't happy with the way they're playing. So the results better be good, you know, when that's
right.
The case.
If you built yourself on the way that you play, and then you get away from that, you better win, okay?
Exactly. And a couple of notes, lineup notes in that Clasico. Gareth Bale is in the midst of a controversy again this weekend. He actually came off the bench and scored the winner against Levante from the penalty spot, but then didn't celebrate, kind of brushed off his teammates when they tried to congratulate him on it. And so the Madrid media crushed him. And, you know, there's always a storyline with him that he's sort of very ostracized from in that dressing room and nobody likes him anyway. So this sort of perpetuated
Poor Gareth.
So there's that issue.
Nobody likes me.
And as far as Barcelona, I expect Dembele to start both these games. games. If he starts Coutinho, they might rip up that contract extension because everybody there is way down on Coutinho. So we will end on this.
All right.
The 2019 MLS season is just about upon us.
Days away, this weekend, right?
Yes, gets underway this weekend. Very exciting. So obviously Atlanta United looking to go back-to-back, lots of other storylines. What most intrigues you about this campaign?
The biggest overall storyline, it is MLS in this offseason in particular made a real effort, and it started with Don Garber very publicly talking about this effort to be involved in the global marketplace and a selling league, or to at least have part of it be a much more of a selling league, and that is, you know, that is seen in the Almiron type of situation right now. So for me, I think the overall story for MLS in 2019 will be in this moment of selling, the whatever exodus happens, are you replenishing? Or are you replenishing with players of equal or better talent and players that are going to translate both the success on the field and the value that we domestically see, but also internationally, the value of these players going forward? So I think that's going to be a big story. We always have the next big thing when it comes to stadiums. So up there in Minnesota with the Loons, the launch of their new stadium is going to be fun. You got if you're into stadium porn and all that kind of stuff, it looks awesome. The folks up in Portland are getting a rejuvenated type of stadium, which means they're going to be on the road. We always have some team that's playing on the road at the beginning until the situation from a stadium gets sorted out for them. All that kind of stuff is going to be huge. You mentioned Atlanta earlier in the podcast. We have a league here where an MLS Cup winning team one year can be the toast of the town so much for historic proportions, and then the next year not even make the playoffs. You got Atlanta United, who have burst on the scene and have said, this is who we are. We are not just a domestic powerhouse, but we have global aspirations. We are the club that everybody else is measured by. Fine, you got to keep that going on a consistent basis, and we'll see if they are able to do that. And then, you know, like there's a million other stories out there. Some of them that we know, some of them that we don't. When it comes to Major League Soccer, and I know a lot of people have a problem, some more so than others, about the lack of promotion relegation in terms of way that the MLS is structured. So you can't have it both ways. You can't have no promotion relegation and stand on that as a principle. And then when you don't make the playoffs, complain. The playoff line, for all intents and purposes, is the line by which we judge the very least whether your season was successful. There's some teams that it's not even a question you make the playoffs. But when you go through and you see teams like the San Jose Earthquakes, when you see teams like, you know, the Vancouver Whitecaps, when you see teams like the Chicago Fire, when you see teams like Orlando, especially Orlando, which has come into the league and now has yet to make the playoffs, that for them is the goal. And if you don't do it, it is undoubtedly and should be looked at as a failure going forward. I'm going to talk a little bit more about MLS in our one big thing, but I'm excited for this the kickoff of this new league, for the incoming talent, the existing talent, but then for that pressure that is, I know it's not perfect, but it is in a league that espouses and lives up to it when it comes to the parity that you have out there. And so we have new coaches, Frank DeBoer in Atlanta. We got Guillermo Barros Schelotto in Los Angeles. Zlatan has already, you know, mouthed off about him, you know, doing incredible things when it comes to the Los Angeles Galaxy, who we know also haven't made the playoffs. So all of these storylines are going to be flushed out as we go forward. But in general, I am more excited about 2019 MLS than I have been in a long time for an MLS season.
We know expansion teams have performed very well recently. What kind of vibes are you getting off Cincinnati?
I'm getting a soft launch type of vibe from Cincinnati in the same way that I think Minnesota did. It will surprise me. Well, I don't think they're making the playoffs, and I don't think that they are going to wow anybody with the product that they have on the field. Now, off the field, I think it will resonate. I think we will say, hey, this is cool. It's not going to be in Atlanta, but nothing is at this point. But I think right now that we are seeing a team that is in soft launch mode. And if you want a hard launch, then it is Minnesota up there with the loons with this stadium. You don't get a pass anymore, all right? If this is your hard launch now and your brand new stadium, you better put something pretty in that pretty box, okay? And something valuable and something that the people of Minnesota and, to a certain extent, those of us outside say, oh, okay, that's interesting. Because for the last couple of years in that soft launch situation, it's been okay and cool at times to see. And I love the whole loons thing, but absolutely no excuses. So, and, you know, for example, the Columbus Crew, you've been saved. It's wonderful. You've been saved. But by the way, you get to keep your name. You get to keep your team. You get to keep all your players. You should be flying right now. You have a new coach in Caleb Porter, who is a recognized winner when it comes to the soccer game, especially the soccer game with his past in Ohio and MLS. You've got Tim Bezbachenko, arguably one of the great minds when it comes to the front office. There should be no excuses at all. I expect this Columbus team in its new incarnation to have been lifted of the burden and of the pressure and of the problems and the challenges that undoubtedly existed and weighed heavily on this organization over the last year.
And we kick off our coverage on Saturday with a doubleheader on FS1. It's the Galaxy hosting Chicago and then Seattle hosting expansion Cincinnati. You mentioned the Galaxy. I mean, obviously, I live in LA, so I'm maybe biased, but I find that whole Galaxy LAFC dynamic fascinating. What can LAFC do to follow up their incredible first season, and can the Galaxy wrestle back sort of the bragging rights? A lot of times,
I know sometimes we talk about the docu series and stuff like that. LAFC has a new one out.
I can't wait. ESPN Plus.
We'll give our friends over there at ESPN a little bit of a plug over there for the LAFC, and I will definitely be watching that. It followed LAFC through the first year of existence, and we're inside to see the creation of that team, literally the creation of that team, both on and off the field. So that should be fun to see. All right, anything else when it comes to that? If you are so inclined, and I hope that you are, tune in, go to and support the kicking off of Major League Soccer happening this weekend, and all professional soccer out there, men's, women's, co-ed, naked, doesn't matter. If somebody's kicking a ball, I'm all for it, and I hope that people support it locally and obviously domestically going forward. Anything else, Mossy?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Our one big thing, and it will come back to Major League Soccer as we kick off yet another league. It is, I recognize, a labor of love, and we kick off this season and love it or hate it or somewhere in between. It is here to stay, thankfully, because there was certainly times where I think there was a question as to whether it was going to survive. Not only has it survived, but it has thrived. I know and recognize and admit that MLS is far from perfect both on and off the field, but there is no denying that it has been the most successful professional soccer league in American history. Still got a long way to go. For an old guy like myself and others who were there from the start back in 1996 and came back to help start this league, it is wonderful to, as I said, to see it not just survive, but thrive and to grow into something that's sustainable, something that is successful, and to grow into, be quite honest, something that I don't think a lot of us envisioned in terms of the infrastructure that exists, the ownership that exists, and just the overall talent. And it does warm the cockles of my redheaded heart. And I know sometimes I am accused of being a shill and a cheerleader or a puppet when it comes to the quote-unquote establishment out there. Do I have an interest in Major League Soccer or any professional soccer league succeeding? You're damn right I do. The more successful that soccer is in the United States, the more opportunities for me, for Mossy, for everybody in this room, for everybody that plays the game, for everybody who loves the game, for the culture. Not just the culture of soccer, but the culture of the United States, that is all good. And I know we all have different ideas as to how it should be done and how it should be run. And there's plenty of critique and criticism out there. Much of it is fair, and please continue to do so if you want to do that. Some of it is based, as I said, out of insecurity or jealousy or just wanting to tear it down. And as I said before, Major League Soccer is la cosa nostra. It's our thing, warts and all. And I'm glad that it's here. I'm proud that it's here. I'm excited to see it, where it's going to go in the future. And do I have a vested interest in it, as I said before? Absolutely, because it is my game. and I want it to succeed. And I hope that there are others out there that want it to, succeed and support it. And just because you don't like the way that it's run, or just because you don't like the person involved here or there, I get it. And as I said, that's at times fair in terms of your criticism. But I choose to believe that it's something that's important, as is every league out there and every league that is trying to establish soccer, to give people soccer and a continual diet and a continual basis. And as I said, whether it's men's or women's or anything else out there at any single level, because I know how difficult it can be. I will support you 100% to give people soccer on a continual basis, because it's what's going to make our, not just our game great, but I also believe our culture and our community is great to give people soccer on a continual basis. So looking forward to MLS as it kicks off this summer. Please please tune in. Anything else, Mossy, before we head out?
Nope.
All right. It's been our pleasure, as it always has, to bring you a little bit of soccer from an American perspective. We thank you for tuning in each and every week. I will also steer you to a special pod that we are going to be putting out. We this week are hitting a milestone in terms of 100 days until the Women's World Cup this summer. So we're putting out a special pod focused on just a general overview 100 days out of what's going to be happening with the Women's World Cup, which you can see on Fox this summer, which we will be involved with. I can't wait to spend a summer in Paris talking about the game that I love. And certainly from a women's perspective, having the defending World Cup champions there is going to be so much fun. So look for that. I'll make sure that we get that out on all the different platforms, and it'll show up anyway in a lot of your platforms out there. But just be on the lookout for that. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you again next week, and as always, size the day.